Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Ready for Free Liberties Current Affairs Talk Show, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Ready for Free Liberties Media Manager here in Washington, D.C. This week, the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom released its annual report for 2021. Among its recommendations are that the U.S. State Department redesignate Turkmenistan and Tajikistan as countries of particular concern and place Uzbekistan in Kazakhstan on the watch list. This means things are pretty bad throughout Central Asia. Only Kyrgyzstan skips the recommendation, but it does not mean that things are light and bright in that country either. So we have a simple question to discuss today, which is what's going on in the region. And I think we have exactly the right panel to explore this. So let's get into this. So today I'm joined by Nuri Turkel, a commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, also a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, Felix Corley, the editor of Forum 18 News Service, an agency monitoring religious freedoms in former Soviet republics in Eastern Europe, Mohammed Can Kabirov, a president of the Foundation for Intercultural Integration and formerly personal assistant of the chairman of the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty, Central Asia, Blog Kishlok Awazi. Welcome on board, colleagues. So we have a lot to talk about, and also we might not have Commissioner Turkel all along with us, as he has some other commitments. So in the interest of time, so why not we start with him by asking an overview of what does this year's report tell us about Central Asia, and following his brief description, we will pick up from there. So Commissioner Turkel, floor is yours.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. Let me begin by introducing what our agency specifically does. The U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom is a bipartisan, independent U.S. advisory body dedicated to promoting the universal right to freedom of religion and belief abroad. We monitor religious freedom conditions in foreign countries. Our mandate in the International Religious Freedom Act, IRFA, as commonly known, we issue a report annually by May 1 every year with the recommendations to the President, Secretary of State, and Congress. The key findings and recommendations in each chapter represent the nine commissioners' view, as well as the fact-finding trips that the research team, policy team undertakes. So this year's annual report that covers the countries that we've been monitoring as part of our mandate, legislative mandate. I personally, as one of the nine commissioners, cover China, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, and then Tajikistan, specifically, as well as Turkmenistan. In China, as you know, that there's an ongoing genocidal campaign against the Uyghur people that the United States government rightfully recognizes as a genocide and crimes against humanity. The Chinese authorities use internment camps, forced labor, sexual violence, a separation of children to enforce, enhance, carry out their religious persecution. We've also been very disturbed by the trend line, the repressive policies against Tibetans and Catholic Chinese population.
Commissioner, these are very useful information, background information for us. For the purpose of this podcast, though, we will be focusing on Central Asia. So since you want to leave us, so maybe we rather focus on Central Asia?
Oh, absolutely. I was going to get to it. So, and the other three countries that I personally monitor along with my commissioners includes Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, and Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan. So in Uzbekistan, in 2020, religious freedom conditions trended positively. The government registered several religious minority organizations, ended a de facto ban on children attending mosque, and released some religious prisoners. Officials, based on my communication with them, based on our staff team's communication, continue to engage closely with the United States government. That includes the IRF office at the State Department. And we are pleased with some of the developments, but at the same time, the Uzbekistan is not there where we'd like it to be. And there's some positive developments, as I pointed out, has been shown. But however, we still recommended the Uzbekistan to be included in the State Department's special watch list.
Where was Uzbekistan last
and
year?
And also, Uzbekistan was removed from the special watch list last year.
So you are placing Uzbekistan back into the watch list?
Yes, we decided to do that because there's still progress need to be seen. Mm. For example, the government did not pass the revised religion law in 2020. officials are still considering recommendations by the international community, but have stated that the law will maintain mandatory registration of religious groups and ban on private religious education and missionary activities still in practice. We also, based on the reports throughout the year, we learned that Uzbekistan authorities continue to harass, detain, and imprison Muslims who practice Islam independently of the state and also who also possess unauthorized religious materials. And finally, activist Musajan Babujanov was arrested and sentenced to 5 days in prison for conducting an Islamic marriage ceremony without state permission. That is unacceptable. Mm. And also, authorities pulled Shia Muslim leader Rashid Ibrahimov from a taxi, brought him in for questioning and forcibly gaining access to his phone that we see in some dystopian societies like Russia and China, where they found religious materials and objectionable if it's not approved by the state. So these kind of trend lines, developments, made us realize that Uzbekistan is not in the place that need to be free of these designations. Mm-hmm. That's why we recommended Uzbekistan to be included in the special watch list. Mm-hmm. We're willing to work with the Uzbek government. We engage with the Uzbek embassy. We're very appreciative of their efforts to talk to us, communicate with us, and show some of the progress that they're making. But we want every country, including the countries that I mentioned earlier, to do well. Right. We want every country to be following the international law and norms to respect their citizens' right to believe in religion and also not to believe in any religion. Yeah. And also be very concerned in some countries in Central Asia, specifically using state security and national security as a pretext to squelch resentment as well as enforcing strict religious control.
I think
of religious practitioners.
I think now you are talking about Tajikistan, I guess, right? And let's talk about Tajikistan and Turkmenistan for a minute, Commissioner. Like these two countries were recommended to be placed on the list of the countries of particular concern. I guess they were on the same category last year. There are two questions that comes to my mind here. Is I guess we could say that these two countries are stuck there, but any thoughts as to how challenges in these two countries are compared to each other?
Tajikistan and Turkmenistan. Turkmenistan goes without saying, anything that is happening in that country is deeply disturbing. The people, not just we can leave aside what our report says, just looking at the situation on the ground is extremely concerning. For example, in 2020, the government turning into kind of a Central Asia version of North Korea, becoming extremely secretive authoritarian regime. They continue to build cult of personality. The government strictly control and monitor all religious activities. Whenever the country looks so orderly, you can suspect that the country has a serious problem. We're also seeing some similar type of trend line in Tajikistan. Tajikistan has been a CPC country of particular concern since 2016. Last year, the Tajikistani government expanded its anti-extremism legislation, stiffened penalties for religious offenses, and conducted mass arrest of Muslim clergy, and who did not even conform with the official sanctioned Hanafi School of Islamic Jurisprudence. So these kind of things need to stop, and particularly concerning, and we're talking about Muslim countries. Most of them have a very large pious Muslim population, and they don't even allow their own people to practice something part of the very important fabric of these societies. Mm-hmm. It's very disturbing, specifically in the case of Turkmenistan. And back to Tajikistan, we recommended Tajikistan to be redesignated as a CPC country. Mm-hmm. And we recommended the United States government to lift the national security waiver for Tajikistan.
That's interesting. Of course, I have a couple of other questions on Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan. But before that, my colleagues are here on the panel. Colleagues, I have lots of questions to Commissioner. Please feel free to jump in, ask question, or add any thoughts you might have into what we hear from Commissioner. Let me also bring you in, Felix, here. You know, we heard the Commissioner's overview. You also follow the region in the context of religious freedom. So for the sake of sort of an interactivity, I just wanted to invite you and give your overview of the region during the past 1 year.
Yes, I mean, what the Commission has found, many of the incidents that it has reported in this report match the things that we have heard from people locally and local human rights defenders, concerns they have raised, and indeed correspondents from RFE on the ground have covered in many of their reports. The countries of the region follow, the regimes follow the policy of Mussolini, nothing outside the state, nothing against the state. So all religion must be controlled, all exercise of freedom of religion or belief is banned unless the government allows it. And even when it does allow it, it has to take place under very strict government control. The one exception really is Kyrgyzstan, which has been very chaotic, not just in the last year or so, but in previous years as well. There are some concerns that local people have, particularly over unpunished sort of mob attacks on some religious communities and government's very chaotic policy. But generally speaking, Kyrgyzstan has the fewest concerns in terms of freedom of religion or belief. But the other four countries have very serious concerns, and the governments want to control the Muslim communities the most. They're the most frightened of the Muslim communities because, A, they're the largest religious communities, and secondly, they fear that these communities could be mobilized against the government. So they use that as an excuse to crack down on all activity. They ban independent mosques. They ban any Muslim activity that is not government controlled, and they control the Muslim community from the inside. All other communities are controlled from the outside through pressure, surveillance, threats, and punishments for activities that the governments do not like.
Yeah, the question of controlling and also the banning of mosques. I mean, this has been very kind of a frequent story that was coming out this year from Tajikistan. And we have Muhammadjan from Tajikistan. So, Muhammadjan, why not I bring you in here? Though you are currently outside the country, anything to add in counter or in favor of what you heard from Commissioner and from Felix, especially about your country, Tajikistan?
Just informing you, yesterday two imams also was arrested. Yeah. One of them, Abdul Haq Obedov and Asadullah Ismailov, they are imam in the Dushanbe in different mosques. Because we don't know exactly why, but last time he was appearing and he brought in hadith at the ceremony and recited this hadith and said that when the wise leaders are leaving us, like dying, and then arrogant leaders becoming the leader of the people. And maybe the security service thought that he is talking about Rahman, but we are not sure. But unfortunately, 19 of April, he was arrested. And also, we have heard that 25 more imam and religious activists were arrested recently, but some of them were released. As Felix mentioned, he is correct. The Minister of Security Service of Tajikistan, Yatimov, said that religious is a threat to the state until the religious serve the state. So that's why the Tajik government fully controlling and having control over the religious figures, mosques, and as you know, the women cannot attend the mosque at all. The teenagers cannot attend at all the mosques, and all other religious restrictions, you are aware, Tajikistan is the country that no beard, no hijab, no Muslims cannot teach their children at the home. It's kind of similar to the China, or we are moving toward the China's policy against Muslims. The other things, Rahman feel that whatever he could do, no one could uphold him responsible for that. For example, the international mechanism not... Since 2016, Tajikistan decision is the country particular concern. But as Saudi Arabia and other allies of the U.S., they never face any sanctions, so they don't feel threat such as being in this list. So they are comfortable being in such a list and also receiving support, financial support from the Western country.
Yeah.
That's why they keep crackdowning on opposition, on religious figures, and that's, I think, the concern.
Yeah, I think you brought us to the point earlier, Commissioner was talking about in terms of the recommendations. Maybe we will get back to that a little bit later. Bruce, let me also bring you in here. I mean, Felix was talking about something very interesting, like Muslims being the biggest target here. Perhaps it's not a new story. We have been talking about this on occasions. Has anything changed the way they target this? And also, what stands out to you, Bruce, as the regional observer from the report that came out from the commission? And also, your based on your own observation, what stands out to you over the past year?
Over the past year, you know, I mean, it seems to just be a continuation of policies that have been going on for a while, you know, and not just, I mean, I understand the point about Muslims, and you're absolutely right, you know, and as was already said, they are the biggest group out there. And I would just add to that, you know, that the leadership of this country is, although they make a big show of being religious, you know, Rahman makes the Hajj or something like that, but they all come out of secular communist backgrounds, you know, certainly with the possible exception of Kyrgyzstan. And they're not religious people, and they don't know much about the religion either. So it probably makes it even more frightening to them that the group that's most likely to topple them would be, you know, the Muslims in their own country. It gives them, you know, Islam gives them a rallying point. The corruption and general, you know, mistreatment and disregard for rights, you know, of the population makes them targets for exactly some religious figures. Say that, don't you see how unjust this is, you know, and shouldn't we do something against it? So you know, they're always going to target the Muslims, without a doubt. Like I said, it's strange. They themselves are Muslims, but it's the group they fear the most, without a doubt. And so you still get that all over Central Asia. And unfortunately, it's too often couched, you know, in terms of the global war against terrorism or something, right? Yeah. I mean, even China and its treatment of the Uyghurs is based on their very thin premise that this has something to do with the global war on terrorism. And Central Asians were some of the first to pick up on that. So use that.
If I may, Bruce makes an excellent point. This is not only about a particular Muslim population who has been affected by the ongoing religious persecution that goes back to the early periods of these countries declaring independence. It's worth to mention the SCO role in the ongoing religious persecution in Central Asia. As you know, that this organization is set up at the initiation of Russia and China in the attempt to squelch political resentment and suppress a demand for greater civil and human rights by religious and ethnic minorities. And this is something much bigger than Uzbekistan or Tajikistan implementing certain policies. What has been one of the trend line that our commission has identified through hearings and investigation, consultation, and research is that the repressive policies that have been described as genocidal campaign that Bruce pointed out in China now metastasizing, expanded to other countries. China, for example, not only exporting the same techniques, they also exporting the technology to SCO countries, allowing the regime to monitor its own population for political expediency, so-called social and national security or social stability and national security concern. And also something I need to point out to end my comment that religious persecution is crimes against humanity. And oftentimes when we see a serious form of religious persecution, that leads to genocide, such as the case of Yazidis, Rohingyas, the Uyghurs now. So we worry as commissioners who monitor religious freedom around the world or religious persecution in 26 countries, that if we don't address the religious freedom issues properly, so that not only create national security concern for the United States and other countries, but also would lead to some unspeakable consequences that we have been seeing to certain religious minorities around the world.
Yeah. Certainly, we are going to talk about, you know, the recommendations that you have listed in the report and what happens when you come up with those recommendations afterwards. But just not to skip Kazakhstan and Kyrgyzstan here, as I pointed out earlier. So is there anything stands out there? When Kazakhstan was proposed to be placed on the watch list in this year's report, and Kyrgyzstan kind of skips you or other, perhaps you have the right reasons for that. But these two countries, you know, they have been the center of lots of political activities over the past year. So anything compared to the previous year in these two countries that catches your attention?
Yeah, let me start with the easier one. Kyrgyzstan, because the condition in Kyrgyzstan has not reached to the threshold for inclusion in either CPC or special watch list. However, we have reported Kyrgyzstan before and will continue to keep an eye on this, the trends in this country. And Kyrgyzstan this year has shown some concerns. Political unrest that you have been reporting and new restrictions on religious freedom. As for Kazakhstan, We recommended Kazakhstan for a special watch list, including special watch list last year. State Department did not designate. We make a recommendation, but it's up for the State Department to make the final decision. The reason for SWL recommendation includes even Kazakhstan made some substantial progress on reforming its approach to religious freedom and belief. They have to show with the real actions, not only on the rhetoric, that indeed these reforms have been in practice. Mm. And we have also been concerned about the non-Muslim individuals' situation. For example, a Presbyterian church in Nur Sultan claims that there's a compensation the government offered amounted to just one quarter of their property market value. And they also there's some restriction on Scientologists, Protestant Christians, and also non-Sunni Muslim population. So these are some of the reasons that we thought that this country need to be included in the SWL list.
Right. Yeah, so this was kind of a reality check. And of course, our speakers on the panel might have their own thoughts, and their thoughts are welcome. In the meantime, many of the comments and the descriptions in the report that was released by the commission are pretty familiar from the commission's previous report last year. So what to do about the region, about those challenges that we keep talking about every year? What the future holds for religious freedom in the region? Let's continue the debate talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the Majlis podcast. Today, I'm joined by Nuri Turkel, Commissioner at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom, also a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute, Felix Corley, the editor of Forum 18 News Service, an agency monitoring religious freedom in former Soviet republics, Muhammad John Kabirov, president of the Foundation for Intercultural Integration and formerly personal assistant of the chairman of the Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan. Muhammad John is originally from Tajikistan. Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Free the Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awasi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Free the Liberties media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. And we are discussing the state of religious freedom in Central Asia. Okay, so the report captures a lot. Your recommendations, Commissioner, to the State Department are also great. I've gone through a number of those countries that we are talking about today. In the meantime, the Commission, Commissioner, has been doing this type of reporting for a long time, and I don't know if the stagnation is the right word to describe the region, but so what's next now? Okay, since you reported, since you put this report out, what's next?
Both Trump administration and Biden administration has emphasized the importance of advancing religious freedom around the world. In the previous administration, as you may recall, that at least three religious freedom ministerials were organized, the first two in the United States, third one is in Poland. And also, there is a bipartisan support for religious freedom, both in the executive branch and legislative branch of the United States government. Mm. As President Biden made it clearly that human rights and democracy will be front and center of the Biden administration's foreign policy. We have been engaging with our interlocutors at the State Department to make sure that the religious freedom issues will be highlighted in the foreign policy agenda. But one thing that needs to be reckoned in the long term, any countries that we monitor, including the ones that has been a part of the State Department's annual report, need to recognize that religious persecution actually bring more instability to the country. This has been the case mostly in Central Asia, for example, that when you look at it, they always use the term related to started in Uzbekistan initially during the Islam Karimov era, that they suppress the religious community to achieve or protect their government's insecurity. The government's insecurity can be best protected by allowing people to go about their life without fear of reprisal from the government.
Yeah. Now, these are
insecure governments engage in this kind of practices.
Yeah.
Actually, religious freedom is good for the society and also help that government to achieve that very objective, stability and national security. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is something that we would like to advocate down the road with the countries that we work with.
Totally understand the advices that you are giving. They are very insightful and very very relevant, but that is not happening, Commissioner Turkel. What I'm saying is what to do about it. I mean, what we are hungry, what people are hungry about is the progress. I mean, how to achieve that?
Recognition is one area that we've been advocating. The countries, as well as our government, need to address that, recognize that is a serious problem. One other thing that I think we should consider, as the case of other countries, that we should consider going after human rights abusers, the government officials and entities. You know, some people may have a different opinion based on my own experience being an advocate now, the official in the U.S. government agency, that when you talk about targeted sanctions, you will get attention from the authoritarian regime or bad actors who are orchestrating, implementing human rights abuses around the world. And the other thing is that we also should use the public forum, especially in the case of some regime that we've been discussing. Public condemnation, you know, calling them out, can be as important as taking a real action. And also we should consider something else. This is part of our report, that we should provide education, training to authorities in these countries that manage religious affairs. It may sound like a long shot, but this is something that has been proven to be an effective method. I know, as I am, as impatient as you are, as someone who is originally from Central Asia, I have been advocating human rights and religious freedom in Central Asia before I become a government official even. It is almost saddening for people who have been expecting Central Asian countries to become more open, more democratic. In the past, you know, when they were under the Soviet rule, they have an excuse to blame others, but they have no excuse to blame other people. It's on their own now. And it's not that difficult. And I strongly encourage these countries to follow their conscience, their tradition, to do the right thing instead of worrying about Russia or China formulating both domestic and foreign policy.
Commissioner, I know I'm kind of dominating the discussion. Other colleagues, please feel free to jump in. Just follow up on that, recommendations that you are giving. And there are two legs into my question. One is, yeah, last year has been complicated because of COVID-19, but earlier I have seen delegation from Commission going to Uzbekistan, meeting the authorities. When you propose these kind of recommendations, advices, what kind of reaction you get from them? And also, once you put these advices every year as part of the report, and I'm sure the report itself is not the only time when you engage the State Department about these issues, you do it often online and offline. So when you present these advices to the State Department, then what happens? Tell us about the structure, the way in which it works.
The reaction is very similar. It usually happens two ways. One, try to prove that you're wrong. You don't have the accurate information or correct understanding of the situation on the ground. In other cases, some government shows willingness to work and identify areas to work. That may be kind of a window dressing short term, but we want to see a long-term change. Again, I cannot emphasize enough of the importance of these countries to reform. In Uzbekistan, for example, recently we've been in communication with the government. Some simple questions such as, you know, can anyone come to Uzbekistan to become a religious leader or imam in a given mosque? The answer is no. In the United States, for example, if you're from Uzbekistan, you can go to a mosque to become imam. Of course, you cannot compare the two, but something like that specific need to be shown. So those reactions are classic, especially when you criticize any government or call them out for bad behaviors, repressive policies. They oftentimes try to play two things. One, what about you? What about ism? Or you have this problem, you have that problem. The Russia and China plays this game all the time. And the weaker and more developing countries that we're covering here, the response is, well, let me show you, it's not what you think. Or flatly deny it. So it's too bad that we cannot travel, but usually after this kind of report or before this kind of report, actual country visit happens. But it's, of course, we have to recognize, you know, we're very clear-eyed about the possibility of being shown what they want these governments us to see, as opposed to what we like to see. So our job is to encourage governments to do the right thing, let their citizens to have a breathing space, let their citizens to enjoy the very right that they bring to this world or come to this world when they open their eyes. So the natural right to believe in any religion, not to believe in any religion, or the life that they wanted to live, is something that we cherish in this country. And also, I need to highlight something. that we always remind our interlocutors or the partners when we work to advance international religious freedom. Our standard is not the U.S. law, U.S. standard. Our standard is the international law, U.N. Declaration of Human Rights.
Right.
So people should be mindful that our commission is not a commission that promotes one religion over another. It's a bipartisan commission.
Right.
In fact, we don't even involve in any domestic affairs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, I also wanted to hear your thoughts about, you know, once you present these recommendations to the State Department, then what happens? Maybe perhaps we can come back to that. But in the meantime, I need to bring in our other speakers. Felix, let me bring you in here. So there are two points that I have in mind here. One is the source of the problem, which keeps the region where they are for a long, long time. What is that from your perspective? And what needs to be done about them? What can work? The commissioner has been recommending certain things, and there are other recommendations in the report. So from your perspective, what can be done about them? And what works in the region?
Well, I think the source of this, as Heiner Bielefeld, the former UN rapporteur on freedom of religion or belief, he says it's a fear of freedom and a fear of religion. This is what drives these policies and violations of freedom of religion or belief. The authorities are afraid, and it seems difficult to find a way to overcome that fear. I agree entirely that if a country adopts freedom of religion or belief, it becomes more stable, more secure, and is less open to instability and threats from perhaps extremist groups and so on. The authorities have two sorts of general ways of attack. One of them is the repressive apparatus that they deploy against anyone that they might see as a threat. And the second part of this is things that specifically target religious communities. And people in general are afraid to criticize the governments of the region anyway. Mm. And they're specifically afraid of complaining about the violations in the area of freedom of religion or belief. But it makes it so important that accurate information is out there, which is what Forum 18 and others are trying to achieve by listening to what local people are saying. And we are not their voice. We don't speak for them. Yeah. They have their own voices, and people should be able to hear them around the world. There are some governments, Uzbekistan is one of them, which seek to, instead of talking to their own people about what they want to see in area of freedom, religion, or belief, they speak to foreigners.
Yeah.
And local people think, well, hold on a minute, you're talking to this government, that government, what about talking to us?
Yeah.
And they say, for example, in Uzbekistan, they adopted this roadmap, so-called roadmap, in 2018, I believe it was. I think Kazakhstan did the same. Has anything happened? Well, no, there's been no amendment to the religion law, very little improvement in the practice on the ground. In terms of the religion law, or what they eventually came up with, it's pretty much the same as what they've got now. It's not much of an improvement on what there is now. And even then, they requested this international opinion from the OSCE and the Venice Commission of the Council of Europe on the 6th of August last year. On the 15th of September last year, they adopted this in the first reading. That was 1 month before the Venice Commission and the OSCE presented their findings. Mm-hmm. So they didn't even wait for the opinion that one of the deputy chairs of parliament had asked for. So, you know, they don't listen to their own people. Are they going to listen to foreigners? At the same time, they are acutely aware of what is written about and spoken about their violations around the world. Mm. So it's one on one side, they pretend not to care. We're just going to do our own thing. Mm. At the same time, they're very, very nervous of what is said about them abroad.
Right.
So it's a very curious situation.
Yeah. Your prognosis are exactly the way I think when I think about Uzbekistan is, you know, what I was also wondering, because we are kind of moving towards the conclusion of the discussion, any thoughts as to what can be done to make them do what needs to be done? What I'm saying is, like, we are talking about the same thing for years after years after years. I mean, it looks like just nothing changes in the region when it comes to issues like religious freedom. So what can move situation towards the progress?
Well, the problem is no one has an insight into the mindset of the leaders of these countries. And in these countries, they're all authoritarian regimes where the word comes from the top and the policy direction is set from the top. I think it's a long slog that local religious communities, local human rights defenders, local human rights groups, when they're allowed to exist, we have to be listening to them. Their voices have to be made as you know, widely heard as possible. Journalists, human rights groups around the world, people like us at Forum 18 and other people and the US Commission and other groups, governments, intergovernmental organizations. It's a long slog. Have to pay very close attention, keep reminding the regimes that they themselves have signed up voluntarily to these commitments to religious freedom for all, and to just keep relentlessly pushing this, saying, look, your people have these rights. You are obstructing them. Why don't you change it? When are you going to change it? Let's see some progress now.
Earlier, Muhammadan, you started talking about, like, you know, President Rahman doesn't even care about what the outside thinks. Is there anything which he would care? And what can work for your country, Muhammadan, to change the situation?
From my personal experience, first crackdown, it was in 2015 when the Tajik government arrested more than 200 leadership of IRPT. And then after three, four years, they saw there is no international reaction. And in 2020, we saw another crackdown, another wave, which 120 religious figure was arrested, accusing them for Ikhwan al-Muslimin. And then 50 students graduated from Iran, and then journalists and other were arrested. So what the international community could done to change the situation? Tajikistan is a very country, a poor country, and very dependent on international monetary system and international assistance, funding assistance. So I think, as the recommendation was mentioned in the U.S. Commission on Religious Freedom, condition U.S. assistance to the Tajikistan government, exception of the humanitarian, that's the good things, and also the smart sanction or targeted sanction to put on the Magnitsky list, to put on different sanction lists in the European Union and within the U.S. will improve the situation on the ground. And the third thing, that the victim of the human rights violation need attention. For example, since 2015, the international community didn't highly prize or mention about these prisoners. For example, Buzurg Mehyarov, he's a lawyer, and other religious figure. They never were nominated for the prize, or diplomats never meet with their families. So I think another issue, if the U.S. diplomats will receive and meet with the in person with the relatives of the prisoners, also will change the situation in the ground in Tajikistan. So smart sanction, diplomatic approach to this to the relative of the victims, and condition U.S. assistance also will improve the policy, because Tajikistan is a poor country and very dependent on international monetary system and.
I think the financial aspect of what you are talking about might be even more relevant this year than any time before, given the pandemic has hit the economy of the whole world. In more countries like Tajikistan, is worst hit because remittances are not coming to the country in the level it used to be.
And just adding another thing, that it seems that freedom of religion has been sacrificed for national security and combating terrorism in Tajikistan. I just compared the State Department report on terrorism in Tajikistan with a human report. It's totally two different reports. It seems that there is miscommunication between people who are cooperating with the security service of Tajikistan and those people are reporting for the human rights issues or religious freedom. Because when you read one report, you see totally positive about Tajikistan, there's all improvement when you read like country reports on terrorism. But when you read human rights report, you see another face. So I think there's a miscommunication, and there should be some cooperation between these different agencies, which is reporting about different topics.
Yeah, one point that you raised, Muhammadchan, that was very interesting. I think that has been very effective in so many other situations. Perhaps, Commissioner, you are listening to us, like the diplomats, or perhaps when you go to countries like Tajikistan for a visit, or countries like Uzbekistan, you go for a visit, and just by going to the victim's family and meeting their family members already gives lots of signal. That is kind of a painkiller tactic. Like when someone is hugely under pressure, just a simple visit like this make a huge, huge difference.
Two additional thoughts on Muhammadjan's point. One, the diplomatic effort, conditioned financial support, can be very effective in the countries like Tajikistan. I agree with that recommendation. And also, in a broader policy approach, the United States government should work with allies and partners, just like the way that we have on other issues, challenging issues. Central Asia is strategically very important region, and also the populations, vibrant population, ancient population. They have a lot to contribute and a lot have contributed to the civilization. If any country, including our own, concern about a stable, prosperous Central Asia, then this has to be tackled, the existing human rights violations, religious persecution, should be handled as part of the regional security issues in tandem with our European allies in particular. Mm-hmm. So this has to be handled on multilateral, bilateral nature. Speaking of bilateral approach, the former Secretary Pompeo's visit to Kazakhstan last year, the Central Asia, was very, very important. Mm. You have to engage with the officials. You have to tell them what we have been asking is actually in the interest of that government, that society. Mm. We cannot dictate a particular country to act or behave in a certain way, but we can encourage them to act in a certain way. If they don't, we call them out.
Yeah.
And also, based on my personal experience, engaging with the victim's family, when you speak out publicly on behalf of those languishing in prison for political, religious, human rights reasons, actually provides them protection in prison. In addition to requesting to meet with their family members during the country visit, highlighting them through Prison of Conscience Project or Religious Prison of Conscience Project to highlight their names, highlight their case, so that the jailors know that there will be somebody watching out for them.
Right. When you advise the your counterparts at the State Department, what kind of reactions you get from there?
Very positive, very positive, and also somewhat frustration being also expressed that when you point out these problems, some countries just flatly deny them.
Yeah.
In some instances, they condemn the United States government.
Yeah.
In some countries, in the case of Uzbekistan, for example, they're willing to work, but that willing to work should be more than just verbal pledge or promises.
Yeah.
The previous Ambassador Lodge for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, worked very closely with the Uzbek authorities. Secretary Pompeo's team worked very closely with the Kazakh authorities. Mm. There's some window of opportunities. I'm particularly willing to work with countries like Uzbekistan and Kazakhstan to set up a kind of a new norm for their neighbors to watch and see that it is effective.
Mm.
And then, you know, countries like Tajikistan, others may follow. Mm. You know, at the outset of the Declaration of Independence in Central Asia, Kyrgyzstan had enormous amount of civil societies, NGO representatives. Mm. They rolled back. If that had been the new norm, we maybe avoided these kind of problems being grabbing headline.
Right, right. Bruce, in compensation for not getting back to you, as I do often in our conversation, so let me give you a microphone, invite you to talk about anything you would like to at this stage and conclude our discussion today.
Anything I'd like to on a Friday evening. No. You know, Muhammadjan mentioned that you know, two of the Imam Hatibs had been detained in Tajikistan this last week. And just I wanted to talk about one of them to kind of give an idea of what the leadership, how the leadership looks at Islam a little bit, right? Okay, now Imam Hatib Abdul Haq Abidov was attending a funeral, and he called the deceased man, who was also an imam, one of Tajikistan's great leaders. this is like double jeopardy. He's calling someone a great leader, even though everyone knows officially, according to the state media and officials out there, the only great leader is the president, Imam Ali Rahman. Mm-hmm. And it came from a religious person at the same time, right? Now, our Tajik service have linked these two things to all this together, you know, and said that's probably the reason he was detained. So that shows how afraid they are of just that kind of comment at a funeral, right? Yeah. And the last comment I would make is that, you know, one of the catchphrases for Central Asia, one of the most common lines I've seen in every report going back 30 years is more than half of Central Asia's population is under 30 years old or something like that. Young population. Well, you know, they're all having kids all the time. So this is always going to be true. Most of Central Asia's population will always be young the way that they're going. That's what the trend shows. And every generation is getting more and more religious. Now, the ones that were born in the 1990s are not as religious probably as the ones that were born in the first decade after the turn of the century. This is the progression of the way things are going to go in that country. And traditionally, one of the biggest battles in Central Asia has been between the person in charge, the authorities, and the religious clergy. You know, so they have a kind of a love-hate relationship that goes back centuries and centuries out there. They're going to have to come up with something new because the challenges of trying to keep control over Islam are going to be more formidable as we go, as we get into the years ahead. So, you know, and let's face it, in 10 more years from now when they hold elections, most of the people that are participating, certainly the politicians, would be people who at best were small children when the Soviet Union fell apart, you know. So this is another thing that they got to consider. They're going to have to come to some new agreement on how this is going to be managed. And hopefully with that would come, since I'm talking about the past, that it's worth mentioning that religious minorities were able to exist in Central Asia all those centuries. Mm-hmm. You know, under that we look back at, you know, the Khans and the emirs and stuff and think that was a primitive kind of lifestyle, but Bukharan Jews were there, and there were Christian organizations, and there were all kinds of other people that were there. And I'm not saying they didn't get picked on from time to time, but they were allowed to exist, and they were still there until very, very recently. You know, it's something else they should think about. If they want to go back to their, if they want to brag about their heritage, their rich heritage, and I'm not going to dispute that, they do have great things that have come out of Central Asia, but if they're going to fall back on their rich history, then they should embrace that part of their history too, which is tolerance for other religious groups.
That's what I had in mind when I said talk about what you have in mind. I mean, we missed a lots of things, so you completed the whole picture. Bruce, thank you very much.
Before we close, is it possible just to recall two current people sitting in jail for their faith, just randomly? Bahram Saparov, who led a Muslim group in Turkmenabad in Turkmenistan, he's got a 15-year sentence. Yeah. He's in the harshest prison of Adan Depe in the desert in Turkmenistan, and very, very few people come out of there alive. He led a big group. There were dozens of people jailed as part of that group. And Shamil Hakimov, a Jehovah's Witness in Tajikistan, he's 70 years old. He had surgery on his leg just before he was jailed, and his leg is now so bad it smells. And other prisoners in the cells with him have been complaining about this, and they will not allow him to be freed early to have proper medical treatment. This is what's going on now. These are the people who are at the sharp end of the government of suppression of freedom of religion or belief for all.
I'm glad that you mentioned my religious person of conscience in Tajikistan. And I adopted Mr. Hakimov as a RPOC in February. We've been advocating his freedom, and it's heartbreaking on a personal level and outrageous that someone as old as he is, suffering serious health issues, not being able to return to his family.
Yeah, both of these points are really, really important. Perhaps we don't have time to continue the discussion, but also maybe just a final thought here. You know, countries like Turkmenistan, which just simply doesn't engage with anyone outside, simply don't allow anyone to come inside. You know, what are the channels we have to communicate our concerns to countries like Turkmenistan, and how to help and how to deal with that kind of situation? I mean, when you are dealing with Turkmenistan, it is entirely a different animal compared to Kazakhstan or Kyrgyzstan. So, that perhaps another topic for a discussion. Let's come back to that sometime in the future. With this, let's end here our conversation for the day. Thank you very much, Nuri Turkel, Commissioner here at the U.S. Commission on International Religious Freedom. Also, big thanks goes to Felix Corley, the editor of Forum 18 News Service, an agency monitoring religious freedom in the former Soviet republics, Mohammed John Kabirov, president of the Foundation for Intercultural Integration, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Free Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today on this very important conversation. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Free Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.